from the city by the Golden Gate, this is KSSR-DB San Francisco, Swing Street Radio. Where the big bands swing. Once again, it's time for Yesteryear, a look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll open the creaking door to Inner Sanctum Mysteries. But first, on the lighter side, let's spend some time with Burns and Allen. Gracie wasn't always as dumb as she seemed on the air. Early in her career with Burns, she played the straight part and George gave out with the funnies. Even a dummy could see that she was getting all the laughs. Burns, no dummy himself, quickly switched the parts, deciding that Gracie, with her natural sense of humor, should become the comedian. By 1930, they opened at the Palace on a bill with Eddie Cantor and Georgie Jessel. Cantor, impressed with Gracie's wit, asked her to appear on his Sunday night NBC program. She created a minor sensation and was booked, this time with her husband, into Rudy Valley's Fleischman's Hour. By 1932, they were signed by CBS to their own program, and during the ensuing 12 years, jumped back and forth between NBC and CBS. By 1945, Burns and Allen jumped networks once again, taking over NBC's Maxwell House Coffee Time. By October of 1950, George Burns and Gracie Allen had made the successful jump to television. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with George Burns and Gracie Allen in the case of Dr. George. Another classic radio moment from the audio vaults of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Canyon. Sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Bert and Marge, Amos and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
It's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen. With yours truly, Toby Reed, B. Benaderet, Lois Corbett, Joseph Kearns, Lou Merrill, Harry Lubin, and the Maxwell House Orchestra, and Bill Goodwin.
For America's Thursday night comedy enjoyment, it's George and Gracie. And for America's everyday coffee drinking enjoyment, it's Maxwell House. Always good to the last drop.
Well, if any new fad comes along, you may be sure that Gracie will fall for it. Her latest enthusiasm is handwriting analysis. And we find her now telling her friend Blanche Morton all about it.
I tell you, Blanche, it's absolutely uncanny. This man can tell you all about yourself just by looking at your handwriting.
You don't say.
Yes. All I did was send him my signature, and he told me the most intimate thing.
What did he tell you?
He said, you are a woman.
No.
Yes. That's all he tells you for a dollar. Then you send in more money, and he tells you more.
Gracie, if you ask me, this handwriting expert is a charlatan.
Yeah, isn't he wonderful?
I mean, you shouldn't send him any more money.
Oh, but wait till you hear what happened when I sent him George's handwriting. He analyzed it and decided that George shouldn't be in radio.
I was wrong. Send him more money.
Oh, I will. He said George's writing showed that he had the delicate, sensitive hands of a surgeon.
A surgeon?
Uh-huh. That's a doctor who wears a mask and carries a knife.
Thanks.
Just think, George is a surgeon and doesn't know it. Blanche, are you busy this morning?
No, why?
Would you let George operate on you just to get the feel of it?
Gracie, you don't just suddenly become a doctor. It'd be years before George could open up an office.
Well, I don't care about an office. I want him to open up people.
I mean, he has to study to become a doctor.
Well, that won't take George long. His natural instinct is to be a doctor. He's only stayed in show business because he had to give me a job. That's the only reason he's in show business.
What?
It's true. It's true. I've heard dozens of people say, if it weren't for Gracie, George wouldn't be in show business.
Yes, but what they meant
was... No, it's my fault, Blanche. My fault that George isn't a doctor. So it's up to me to release his natural instinct. And you can help me.
He's not going to carve on me.
Uh-oh. I hear him coming down for breakfast. Now, when he walks in, you act like a patient, and we'll see how he reacts. Stick out your tongue and all that.
Well, I'll do it, but it's silly.
Shh. Here he is.
Good morning, dear. Oh, hello, Blanche.
George, take a good close look at Blanche.
Before breakfast?
Yes.
Okay. Well, right back to you.
George, Blanche did that to show you how she feels.
Well, I feel the same way about her.
Don't you think she looks a little peaked?
Yes, her head is very peaked.
Give him another look, Blanche. What do you think she should take?
Arsenic.
Write that down, Blanche.
I told you this was silly, Gracie. I'll see you later.
What kind of a routine was that?
Well, did it stir something deep inside of you?
Yeah, but I'm going to try to eat anyway.
Very well, Doctor.
What? Doctor?
Well, how does that sound to you, dear? You like me to call you a doctor?
Yeah, but you better call one for yourself, too. What's this all about?
Well, I sent your handwriting in to be analyzed, and you're in the wrong business. You have the hands of a surgeon.
What?
Your handwriting has revealed the inner you, the real George Burns. You were never meant to be an actor. That's why people laugh at you. Become a surgeon. Put on a mask, and he'll stop laughing.
Gracie, you have to go to school to be a doctor. You have to go to school for 8 years.
Well, then you're practically a doctor. You've already gone to school for 7 years.
Now, look, just because some handwriting expert said that I was supposed to be a doctor, that doesn't make it so.
Oh, I took no chances, Judge. I checked it to make sure.
Checked it? How?
By numerology.
Oh, well, that makes it authentic, yeah.
Well, sure. You see, your name, G-E-O-R-G-E, and Doctor, D-O-C-T-O-R, both have 6 letters. That means you vibrate with a doctor.
There are also 6 letters in D-A-N-C-E-R. Suppose I vibrate with a dancer.
Well, you better not let me catch you.
Gracie, listen to me. Even if all this hokum were true, I couldn't become a doctor now. I'm too old.
How old are you?
I'm 10 years older than you are.
Since when is 29 too old?
I'm too old to go to school.
But think of the thrill of being a great doctor. I can see you now performing a delicate operation. Maybe a brain operation. Maybe on me.
If I thought there was a chance of that, I'd go to school.
Good. A few months of schooling and you'll be a great doctor. Why, you can be Johns Other Hopkins.
forget it, honey. Show business is my racket. Listen.
Oh, how do, Mr. and Mrs. Audience? It is now my turn to perform, and I'll present to you a little review in style, originality, and form.
That's what I've been giving people for years.
Well, so now become a doctor and make them well.
Gracie, I've tried to be patient and explain things to you. Now I've had enough. Understand?
Yes, dear.
I don't want to hear any more about this doctor business.
Yes, dear.
I'm going down to the cigar store. Goodbye.
Goodbye, doctor.
Oh, no.
I knew George wouldn't go for it, Gracie.
Oh, Blanche, I still say all he needs is to have his doctor instinct aroused. And that's why I dropped by. I'm on my way to the hospital.
The hospital?
Well, I'm going to offer George his services. Once he gets inside and smells the ether, boom.
You mean he'll be like a bird dog who smells a bird?
Yeah, or a police dog who smells the police. Then he'll go to school and become a doctor. Oh, I'll be so proud of him.
Gracie, doctors are wonderful, but I don't think George will ever be one.
He will, too. Oh, I can see him now, dashing around in his delivery trunk, delivering babies. Relieving suffering. Giving tall people high pose and short people low pose. Discover a new germ.
Oh, Gracie.
Well, they discover new ones every day, like that germ that makes people drunk.
What germ makes people drunk?
Streptococci.
Gracie, George couldn't even be a witch doctor.
He could, too. You just bring him a sick witch. Well, I'll see you later, Blanche. I've got to get to the hospital.
May I help you?
Oh, how do you do? This is the largest hospital in town, isn't it?
Yes, this is the general hospital.
Well, I'd like to speak to the head man. Is the general in?
There's no general here.
Oh, well, then I'll speak to the private.
There's no private either.
There must be. His name is right on that door. Private Ward.
Miss.
If he's busy, I'll talk to someone even lower. Lieutenant.
We have no military personnel here. Perhaps I can help you.
Well, I want to offer my husband services.
Is he a doctor?
Well, he's going to be. That's why I want him to work here.
I see. Has he taken medicine?
Tons of it.
Perhaps you'd better talk to Dr. Powell. He's the hospital superintendent. You'll find him in the experimental laboratory down the hall.
Thank you.
How's your experiment coming along, Dr. Powell?
Well, I've gone as far as I can, Dr. Reynolds. I've tested this serum on guinea pigs and monkeys, but I can't find a man to volunteer for a test.
Exactly. What will the serum do?
Well, if it works, you live to be 100.
And if it doesn't?
No one knows. That's why I can't get a volunteer. I've advertised in the paper. I've offered money. There doesn't seem to be any man brave enough to risk it.
Maybe you can find a condemned criminal who...
I'm in.
Dr. Powell?
Yeah?
I'd like to offer my husband services.
Ah, at last, a volunteer.
You can use them, huh?
Oh, yes, yes. Sit down and let's fill out these vital statistics. Name?
George Burns.
Sex? Oh, but I know what that is.
Well, you should. You're a doctor.
Yes. What's his height?
5'8", or 5'10" after a poker game.
5'10" after a poker game?
Well, he tiptoes in, so I won't hear him.
I see. Wait.
Now, I'm not sure what it is now. Sometimes he weighs as little as 140 and sometimes as much as 170.
Well, I'll put it somewhere around the middle.
Oh, good. That's where he puts most of it.
Where was he born?
In New York. He was raised on Pitt Street.
I see. He grew up on the east side.
He's no freak. He grew up on both sides.
Yeah. Now, one question about his physical condition. Are his nerves steady?
Mm, I, I don't know. The rest of them wobbles quite a bit.
Well, I'll substitute another question. How long has he been married to you?
15 years.
Steady nerves. Mrs. Burns, send your husband right over. We'll be waiting for him.
Oh, all right. Just one thing, Doctor. Be sure to let him smell plenty of ether.
Well, I really prefer to give him some local anesthetic.
Well, I don't care where it's made. Just give him plenty of it.
Gracie, I just had to run by and see how your plan to make George a doctor is working out.
Oh, I thought you'd be anxious to hear about it, Glenn.
Oh, sure, I'm all ears.
Well, don't worry. When George is a doctor, he'll trim them down for you. And that won't be long now. I got him a job at the General Hospital so he can smell the ether.
What kind of a job?
Well, I don't know. It's in the experimental laboratory.
Well, gee, that's where they work with microbes and bacteria. I hope George doesn't bring any home.
Oh, Blanche, you know he wouldn't steal.
What'll George say about this job?
Oh, I won't tell him about the job. I'll trick him into going to the hospital, and his instinct will do the rest.
Well, you better start tricking. Here he comes up the walk.
Now, watch how I handle him, Blanche.
Hello, dear.
Hello, George. Well, aren't you going to speak to Blanche?
Oh, sure.
That's nice. Well, as I was saying, Blanche, this doctor wanted George to sing at the General Hospital, and I said, well, doctor, he hasn't got time.
Wait a minute. The General Hospital? Sing? Me?
No, please, dear, I'm talking to Blanche. So I said, my husband is much too busy to sing at a hospital. Hold it.
Somebody wanted me to sing and you turned them down?
Yes. Yeah, Dr. Powell called from the General Hospital. He seems to think your singing would help the patient.
Well, he's right. I've been writing her a letter to Virginia where I met her. And now I feel better, cause I know I'm going home. You see, Gracie, a voice like mine is soothing. It eases pain. It's like a shot of morphine.
You're not kidding.
Pooh to morphine. When George gets to the hospital, they'll have a real dope.
Yeah. Now, where'll I find us, Dr. Powell?
Well, in the experimental laboratory.
Well, don't expect me back until late. I'll probably do about 8 or 9 of my routine. I'll see you later.
I'm writing her a letter.
Oh, you know, I hated to trick him, Blanche, but it's worth it. Someday he'll be a great surgeon.
That'll be the first time a ham ever did the carving.
Have you got my serum ready, Dr. Reynolds?
Yes, Dr. Powell.
Good. Mr. Burns should be here soon.
Gee, I can't understand why a married man would be willing to take such a risk.
I can. I talked to his wife.
Well, if he shows up, he's the bravest man I've ever seen. Why, this serum could...
Come in.
Dr. Powell?
Yes?
I'm George Burns. Understand you want me for a little routine.
Ah, did you hear that, Dr. Reynolds? What a magnificent understatement. Ah, you're a brave man, Mr. Burns.
Well, I used to get nervous, but I'm an old hand at this. I've been through the mill.
Yes, you do look like you've been used frequently.
Yeah, I'm a veteran. I can do anything.
Well, I think you'll find today's job a little different.
That's right, Mr. Burns. You're taking the place of Powell's guinea pigs.
That's okay. I once took the place of Madame Burkhardt's cockatoos. That's the time I laid an egg.
Hey, you can do anything.
I whistle, too, you know.
Well, before we start, let's check your condition. Dr. Reynolds, would you take his pulse count?
Certainly. One.
Do we have to bother with this? I'm raring to go.
Oh, we admire your spirit, Mr. Burns, but you must realize that you might die.
Not with my material.
Well, of course, we do have hope.
Hope? You better put me on ahead of him. He's tough to follow.
Oh, what a man. Jesting at a time like this.
Two.
By the way, Doctor, where do we do this act?
Oh, right here in the experimental laboratory. It's our largest room.
Good, good. I like a big audience.
Is it all right with you if all available doctors and nurses watch the performance?
Sure. Be glad to hand them a thrill.
I'm writing her a letter.
Mr. Burns.
To Virginia where I met her.
Mr. Burns.
And now I feel better, because I know I'm going home.
Mr. Burns, we can postpone this if you're in pain.
I feel great.
Three
already? I must be nervous. My pulse is fast today.
Hi, Gracie. So how come you're going in the hospital?
Oh, hello, Bill. I'm going in to visit George.
What's the matter with him?
Oh, he isn't a patient here. He's inside smelling the ether.
What for?
Well, I'm trying to get him out of radio.
Well, that won't do it. He's still in radio and he's been smelling up the ether for years.
Understand. You see, George is meant to be a doctor, so I got him a job in the experimental laboratory. Come on in and see him.
Well, okay, Gracie. I love to go into hospitals, you know. I always pack something.
You like that?
Well, sure. You ought to see the nurse I caught yesterday. Well, come on, let's go.
Just a moment. Where are you going?
Well, we're going to the experimental laboratory.
I'm sorry. They're about to conduct an experiment. You can't go in now.
But it's important.
I have strict orders. No one admitted to the laboratory but doctors and nurses.
Oh, did you hear that, doctor?
Yeah. Come on, nurse.
Wait a minute. Are you a doctor?
Oh, sure. Dr. Goodwin, Hollywood's fastest operator.
Where do you operate?
Well, mostly in Griffith Park.
Griffith Park?
Yes, he does a lot of cutting up there. Come on, doctor.
One moment, Mr. Goodwin. I've seen you around this hospital before. You were chasing one of our young nurses.
Oh, well, yes, I wanted to have a consultation with her.
That's ridiculous. The girl was just a beginner. She'd had no experience.
Oh, no? Then why did she run?
Yes.
Just a minute. I can't believe that he's a doctor. I doubt if he'd know a sore throat from a maternity case.
Oh, you're wrong. Maternity cases are his specialty. Well, just yesterday, he cured a man who had a very bad case of maternity.
What she means is that this expectant father was very nervous, you see. The poor guy was pacing the floor saying, will it be a boy or a girl? Will it be a boy or a girl?
Mr. Goodwin, I've heard enough. You're not a doctor and you can leave this hospital.
Oh, come on. Let us go into the experimental laboratory. We just want to see my husband, Mr. Burns.
Why, he's the man who's being experimented on. They're giving him a new serum. And if it works, he'll live to be 100 years old.
Ooh, well, gee, no wonder they picked George. They won't have to wait long to see if it works.
Well, I'll be running along, Gracie. Tell him hello for me.
But did you say they're experimenting on Mr. Burns?
Yes. Dr. Powell is making a guinea pig out of him.
Well, I've got to stop him. I don't want a husband who oinks.
I'm sorry, you can't disturb the experiment.
Well, Mr. Burns, we're just about ready to begin.
Swell.
How is his pulse count, Dr. Reynolds?
I'm still taking it. 7.
That will be enough. Our audience is assembled, so let's get started. Mr. Burns, will you remove your clothes?
That's not the kind of act I do, Doc. You should have gotten Gypsy Rose Lee.
Oh, what courage. Joking right up to the last minute.
Come, Mr. Burns. Time is short. Take your clothes off.
Well, do I have to?
Yes.
Well, okay, if you insist, but shouldn't we save that for a sock finish? I can't top that with ain't misbehaving.
What?
Look, let me routine it for you, Doc. I'll open like this.
Ain't misbehaving all by itself.
And, Mr. Haven, I'm happy on the show, babe.
Mr. Burns.
Don't talk to
Mr. Burns,
my love. Oh, baby, love you. Really, Sable, love you. I know.
Well, then I'll go into my Frisco step. I brought my derby hat.
Mr. Burns, remove your clothes.
Well, okay, but at least give me a fan.
Mrs. Burns, I've explained that you cannot go into the experimental laboratory and interrupt Dr. Powell.
But it's my fault that my poor husband is in there. He doesn't know what he's getting into.
I have strict orders.
Oh, my appendix. Quick, take me to Dr. Powell.
He won't remove your appendix.
He already did. I want it put back.
I'm sorry, that won't get you in.
No, huh? Let me go in there, quick. I'm going to have a baby.
In the experimental laboratory?
Well, yes, this is my first one, and it's an experiment.
Mrs. Burns, it's no use.
Well, look, tell the doctor to give me the serum. I love George. I can't let anything happen to him. Let me take his place.
Bad, Dr. Powell.
Yes. A shame it didn't work out.
Well, don't let one failure discourage you.
I'll try again, Dr. Reynolds.
Oh, Dr. Powell.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Burns.
Is it over?
Yes, it's all over.
How is my husband?
Mrs. Burns, I hate to tell you this, but...
But what?
Your husband is as nutty as a fruitcake.
Did you give him the serum?
No, we couldn't catch him. He's in there running around with nothing on but a derby hat singing Ain't Misbehaving.
Oh, my goodness. He is crazy. He looks awful in a derby hat. Oh, I better take him right home. Good night, dear. Happy dreams. George, you're mad at me because I try to make you a doctor.
Oh, how can I stay mad? You did offer to take my place when you found out the experiment was dangerous.
Well, sure, I love you.
Well, you wouldn't love me so much if I were a doctor. Their wives get no romance.
No burning kisses?
No, sir. Doctors don't have time for that. All a doctor's wife gets is a fast peck on the cheek.
Well, then I'm glad you're an entertainer. Good night, dear.
Good night.
George, kiss me again.
Okay.
Good night, doctor.
Well, Gracie, next week our guest star will be that sensational movie menace, Richard Widmark.
Richard Widmark. Oh, he's wonderful.
Yeah, that's the kind of part I'd like to play. A heartless killer.
George, with a movie star here next week, I'll need a new outfit.
Oh, yeah? Well, try and get it, huh? You're talking to a big man. A killer. I'll give you nothing.
George, buy me a new outfit.
Yes, dear. Good night.
Until next Thursday, when we will have as our guest Richard Widmark. Good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, America's favorite brand of coffee, always good to the last drop.
From sometime in the late 1940s, there's Burns and Allen with Dr. George. In a moment, we'll open the door to Inner Sanctum Mysteries with Make Ready My Grave. As this edition of Yesteryear continues,
you're listening to listener supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Inner Sanctum Mysteries, the famous horror show of the creaking door, was first heard on the NBC Blue Network in January of 1941. Hyman Brown, a young producer-director of network radio, got the idea for the greatest opening on the air in one quick flash. In a broadcasting studio where he had been working, the door to the basement groaned and squeaked whenever anyone opened it. Turning to an assistant one day, Brown said, "I'm going to make that door a star." And indeed he did. Inner Sanctum was on CBS through September of 1943 and became a mainstay there. Hyman Brown directed the show throughout the run. Great horror men of the screen appeared on Inner Sanctum Mysteries, especially in the first year when Boris Karloff was almost a regular. Among the other notables were Paul Lucas, Peter Lorre, Claude Rains, and Raymond Massey. The announcer in the early run was Ed Herlihy. The final full season was sponsored by Mars Candy, but the program was sustained when it left the air in October of 1952. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Inner Sanctum Mysteries and Make Ready My Grave from April 23rd of 1946. Another classic show from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soups present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host opening the squeaking door for another session of the AGGMS, the Association of Ghouls, Ghosts, and Midnight Spirits. Oh, may I see your membership card as you enter, please? No. It's not a printed card. All you have to do is show me your wrist. If there's any blood pulsing in your arteries, then you don't belong here tonight. Better come back and try some other time, after you've passed your mortuary test. And now for tonight's Inner Sanctum Mystery. It's an original radio play by Emil Tepperman, called Make Ready My Grave, and stars two radio favorites, John Banks and Richard Widmark. It's about a boy and a girl who've just been married. A piece of colored string, an open grave, and a hangman's noose. That train is the Southeast Limited. See it? Long and sleek and powerful, clicking off the miles on the humming rails. A masterpiece of 20th century mechanical perfection. Nothing about it to suggest lurking hate or fear or superstition or death. But let's take a look into compartment A, car 17. John and Betty Loomis, just married, are going for their honeymoon to John's ancestral estate.
John, I'm so happy. How soon do we get to Loomisville?
In about an hour, Betty.
Just think, I married into one of the oldest families in the state.
I hope you'll be very happy, darling.
Oh, I will. You do love me, don't you, John?
Of course I do, baby. I'll always love you. Always. No matter what happens.
What do you mean, no matter what happens? What could happen? John, something's bothering you.
No, it's nothing at all.
You're hiding something. There's something you haven't told me.
It's nothing, Betty. It's nothing to worry about.
You don't want to tell me?
No, not now. Maybe later.
Why are you playing with that piece of yellow string?
What?
You've been playing with it ever since we came onto the train.
Gosh, I never noticed.
I watched you. You've been tying a knot in it.
A knot? Good Lord. I must have tied it without knowing what I was doing.
You've tied it into a noose. A hangman's noose.
I don't know how I came to make it or where I picked it up.
Well, it's only a piece of string.
Yes, it's only a piece of string. Betty.
What is it, John?
Here, take this.
A gun?
Take it.
But why?
If I should ever try to strangle you...
John.
Please listen to me. If I should ever try to strangle you, promise me to use that gun on me.
What are you talking about?
Louisville, next stop.
Oh,
next stop, Bloomersville.
This is where we get...
John, what's this all about? That piece of yellow string and now this gun.
Put it away, Betty, and remember what I said. Don't ever forget it.
So dark here.
Well, this is just a way station. The train only stopped here to let us off. Otherwise, it goes right through.
Oh? I thought Loomisville was a big town.
Well, it used to be 100 years ago, but now there's only the Loomis estate.
Are we far from the estate?
About 2 miles. Old Herman Galt should be here to pick us up in the station wagon.
Herman Galt.
Mm-hmm. He's the handyman. There's been a Galt working for the Loomis family for the last 150 years.
John, I don't like it here. Dark, and that wind.
Where the devil can Galt be? I wrote them what train we were taking.
I'm right here, what? Mr. John.
Oh, Galt, you frightened my wife.
I'm sorry, ma'am, if I scared you.
Oh, that's all right. It was just the way you spoke so suddenly out of the darkness.
If you'll follow me, I've got the station wagon back here.
John, he doesn't like me.
Galt? No, that's just his way. He's very devoted to the family. Wait till you get to know him.
I don't think I care to. Johnny, he's driving too fast. It's so dark.
Don't worry, Betty. Galt knows this road like the back of his hand. We'll be there in a few minutes.
I'm frightened. Darling, please, tell me why you gave me the gun.
No, I can't tell you now, Betty. Maybe after you meet Uncle Everard.
John.
What?
What's that in your hand?
Where? Oh.
Another piece of string. A red one this time.
Well, I must have picked it up in here, off the seat.
You've knotted it into another hangman's noose.
Galt?
Yes, Mr. John.
This piece of red string, did you put it here?
No, sir.
Then how did it get here?
You ought to know.
Yes. Yes, I ought to know.
Galt, why are you stopping here?
We're home, ma'am. This is the entrance to the Loomis estate. I've got to get out and open the gate. I'll be right back.
Betty, I've got to get out, too. I've got to see for myself.
See what, John?
You stay here, Betty.
But,
stay right where you are.
Wait a minute. I'm coming, too.
Betty, get back in the car.
Mr. John is right, ma'am. You shouldn't go with him.
Take care of her, Galt. I won't be long.
Galt, where's he going?
That is the Loomis family cemetery.
What does he want to see in there in the middle of the night?
He'll tell you himself, ma'am. In due time.
No, I'm going to find out right now.
Better not, ma'am. Better come.
John! Back. John, wait for me.
Betty, I told you to stay in that
car. I'm going
car.
With you. I want to know what there is in that cemetery.
Get back in that car.
I'm your wife now. I have a right to know what this is all about. I'm going with you.
All right, if that's the way you feel about it. But hold on to that gun I gave you. Keep it in your hand all the time.
John, why?
You'll find out soon enough. This is the gate of the family cemetery. All the Loomises and their wives are buried here.
It's so shadowy. White tombstones look like ghosts. Hold my hand, John.
No. Just hold on to that gun.
John, whose grave is this with the high tombstone?
My great-grandfather's. Stuart Loomis. He founded the Loomis estate. This is my grandfather's grave. His wife. Here's my father. My mother.
And that's all?
That should be all.
What do you mean?
Come over here. This is what I came to see. This is what I've been afraid of.
John, it's an open grave. Freshly dug.
Yes, Betty. It was just dug tonight.
But who is it for?
Betty, darling. I'm afraid it's for you.
What's poor Betty letting herself in for? With a fresh grave waiting for her on a honeymoon. And a husband who ties little strings into hangman's nooses. But you know, come to think of it, Betty's a lucky girl at that. How many girls who get married nowadays can count on finding a nice, snug place all ready for them to lie down in and rest? In peace. And now let's hurry back to our date in a graveyard. Remember? With poor Betty, whose husband has just told her he's afraid the freshly dug grave is for her.
John, what do you mean? Who dug this grave for me? Who?
If I told you, you'd think I was crazy.
No, you've got to tell me. If I'm in danger, I have a right to know. Was it God? Your Uncle Everard?
No. No, at least I don't think so.
His wife, Christine.
Betty, do you believe that a ghost could dig a grave?
A ghost? Do you mean I'm in danger from a ghost?
Oh, I told you you'd think I was crazy.
John, why are you looking at me like that?
I don't know. Betty, have you got that gun with you?
No, I left it in the car. What good would a gun be against a ghost?
There's the station wagon still waiting at the gate, but I don't see Galt.
Maybe he went up to the house.
Galt, where are you?
Hello there, John.
What's up? Uncle Everard. What happened to Galt?
He came up to the house. Said you'd gone into the cemetery. So I thought I'd better come down.
Oh.
Is it there?
Yes, it's there. A freshly dug grave. Oh. Uncle Everard, this is my wife, Betty.
How are you, Betty?
Hello.
You saw the grave too, Betty?
Yes, and John says he thinks it's for me. I'm afraid I don't understand all
this. You haven't told her anything yet, John?
Well, just a little. I couldn't bring myself to.
I think it's time you did. More tea, Betty?
Thank you, Uncle Everard. I will have a little more.
You, John?
No, thanks.
Too bad Christina's ill. She's upstairs in our room. But I hope she'll be better by tomorrow. You can see her then.
Maybe.
What do you mean?
That grave out there. Maybe it'll be filled tomorrow.
John, don't you think it's time you kept your promise to tell me what this is all
about? You tell her, Uncle Everard.
Well, Betty, there's a ghost in the Loomis family. That's it in a nutshell.
Oh, I see. And it was a ghost who dug that grave.
I know it sounds mad. But after 150 years, we Loomises have come to the conviction that it can't be anything but a ghost.
150 years? You mean...
John's great-grandfather, Stuart Loomis, settled this strip of seacoast under a patent from the colonial governor. There's his picture over the fireplace.
He doesn't look much like you, John.
Stuart Loomis was a hard man. There was a French privateer in these waters who made a lot of trouble in those days. Gaston Leroux, who sailed the seas with his wife, Antoinette.
But what has a French pirate and his wife to do with that grave?
Stuart Loomis captured Leroux and his wife, and under the authority conferred upon him by the governor, had the power to hang them.
You mean the woman, too?
Yes. He hanged them both on a gibbet where our family cemetery now stands.
Oh, how terrible.
Before he died, Gaston Leroux laid a curse on the Loomis family. He swore that just as his wife was hanged, so would all the Loomis women die. He He swore that he would come back and dig a grave for the wife of a Loomis in every generation and furnish the noose by which a Loomis would strangle his own wife.
But that's incredible.
Short while afterward, a fresh grave was found beside the gibbet where LaRue had been hung. That night, Stuart Loomis's wife, John's great-grandmother, was found hanging by the neck from the eaves of this very house.
And Stuart Loomis?
I told you Stuart Loomis was a hard man and had made many enemies. There were many who hated him deeply and bitterly. He was arrested and tried for the murder of his wife. Convicted and executed.
Now you know the secret of the Loomis family.
But, John, that still doesn't prove it's a ghost.
No, that one incident doesn't prove it. But it happened again when the next Loomis married, John's grandfather. And to the next Loomis, John's father. Sometimes a year after he married, sometimes 5 years. But the curse never fails.
It's happened in every generation?
Yes. And now, John Loomis has brought a new wife home. There's a freshly dug grave waiting in the family cemetery.
Then I'm next.
I don't know, Betty. Maybe that grave isn't for you.
What?
Maybe it's for Christine. For my wife.
Oh, this is all ridiculous. A ghost couldn't dig a grave, make John strangle me to death. Uncle Everard, you can't believe such a legend. It can't be true.
Maybe not, my dear. But the graves of the strangled Loomis women are out there to prove it. Well, this is your room, Betty. I'll have God call you at 8 tomorrow morning. Good night.
Good night, Uncle Everard.
Good night, John.
Good night, Uncle Everard.
This is such a big room. It's so gloomy.
The whole house is like that. It lies gloomy and sullen under the Loomis curse. Oh, Betty, I love you so much. We'll beat the curse together.
Let me go, darling. I want to change my clothes and wash.
All right. There's the bathroom over there.
I'll only be a minute.
All right, darling.
Oh, it's a lovely bath.
Betty, what is
it? John, quick.
What?
Look. Hanging from the shower bar.
What? A hangman's noose.
It's a real one this time. Of rope.
Ready to hang someone.
Who put it there?
It's the Loomis curse. We can't get away from it.
No ghost could have hung that rope there.
Let's call Uncle Everett.
All right.
Have you got the gun with you?
No, it's in my handbag.
Well, get it.
But John...
Get it, I say.
All right, John. Here, I've got it.
All right, now keep it with you all the time. And don't be afraid to use it on me if necessary.
All right, let's get your uncle.
This is his room. I wonder if I ought to wake him. It might upset Aunt Christine. She's sick.
We've got to wake him. Better knock harder.
Well, it wasn't locked.
Call him.
Uncle Everard. Uncle Everard? Doesn't answer. But there's a light in the room.
Push the door further open.
All right. Well, there's nobody in the room. The bed's empty. Uncle Everard? Aunt Christine?
Maybe in the bathroom. The door is open.
Betty!
John, Mom!
Aunt Christine.
Hanging by the neck.
She's dead.
It's the same kind of a noose as in our bathroom.
Uncle Everard hanged her. It's the Loomis curse catching up with us.
Galt any trace of Uncle Everard?
I searched the whole house, basement to attic. Not a sign of him.
And he must have gone out. Come along.
But it's raining.
We've got to find him, Betty. Come on.
So dark out here. How will we ever find him?
I have a flashlight, ma'am. You look.
What?
Fresh footprints in the slush.
Oh, they must be Uncle Everard's. They lead down toward the cemetery. Come along, Galt.
Here, Mr. John, you can see for yourself. The footprints lead right to this new grave.
But why did he come here?
There's the answer, Betty. A cross at the head of the empty grave. Throw your flashlight on it, Galt. There's something written on it.
It says, Christine Lou.
Betty, what is it?
Look. Over there.
Another grave. He's dug another one.
There's a cross on this one, too.
Does it say anything?
Yes. Yes, it does. It says, Betty Loomis.
John, sit close to me. That portrait of Stuart Loomis over the fireplace looks so real. It frightens me.
Now, remember, Betty, whatever happens, hold on to that gun and don't be afraid to use it tonight.
Where is Galt?
He ought to be here soon. He went to look for some weapons.
Here I am, Mr. John.
Galt, you always frighten me coming in so quietly.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Here, Mr. John, these ought to be pretty good weapons.
Size?
Yes, I had them sharpened only the other day. They could slice a man's head off in one stroke. Take one, Mr. John.
Thanks. But I'd hate to use it on Uncle Everard.
If he shows up tonight, you'd better use it.
Maybe he's come back into the house through the back way.
I'll go through the house again if you'd like. This time I'll start with the attic.
Be careful, Galt.
I will, Mr. John.
John, I don't like him.
Galt?
And I don't think he likes me either.
Oh, that's not true.
Darling, what's that?
Must be Galt in the attic.
Help, Mr. Galt!
You must have met Uncle Everard hiding up there. Stay right here, Betty, and hold on to that gun.
John, be careful.
Don't worry. Just take care of
yourself. John, come back. I'm frightened. I'm afraid to be alone. There's nothing to be afraid of. I have this gun. And if anybody comes, the lights. The lights went out. There. Who's in this room? Don't come any closer. I have a gun and I'll shoot. I can't see you, but I'll shoot at the sound. John! Help! Around my neck. Let go. I'll shoot.
It's not loaded. I took the bullets out when you left it in the car.
Galt?
Yes, ma'am, it's Galt. Mr. John is busy up there in the attic with the body of Mr. Everard. I killed him, too. And when Mr. John comes downstairs, he'll find you. And I'll cut him down in the dark with my scythe.
Why?
There were others besides the pirate LaRue who hated Stuart Loomis. Like my own great-grandfather, he was in the service of Stuart Loomis, and he hated him. When LaRue laid the curse on the Loomises, my great-grandfather decided to make it come true. It was he who strangled the wife of Stuart Loomis. Through the years, the Galts, from father to son, have handed down their hate.
You're mad.
Maybe. I'll tighten the noose and finish
Betty,
you.
Where are you? Why is it dark in here?
John!
Betty!
John, look out, it's Galt. He has a thigh.
So will I.
John! John!
Darling, where are you?
Here, John, here. Oh, darling.
Betty, we've finished forever with the Loomis curse.
Well, that was a pretty rough honeymoon for Betty. But, you know, there's a lesson in her story for forgetful wives.
Yes, if you keep tying little colored strings to your fingers to remind you of things and you still can't remember them, why not try a rope neatly tied around your neck? It's sure to help you forget. And so our evening's over, with the usual quota of corpses to qualify for the ghoul school. We're working on a special matriculation for bachelor ghouls. In case you didn't know, a bachelor ghoul is one who believes that two can die as cheaply as one. Until then, good night. Pleasant dream.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From April 23rd of 1946, it's been Inner Sanctum Mysteries with Make Ready My Grave. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have today, but join us again next week and invite a friend to listen to enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, thanks for listening and so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery. Sat listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
The preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions. All rights reserved. KSSR-DB San Francisco. Where the big bands swing.
Time after time, I tell myself that I'm so lucky to be loving you. So lucky to be the one you run to see in the evening when the day is through. I only know what I know. The passing years will show. You've kept my love so young, so new. And time after time, you'll hear me say that I'm so lucky to be loving. Passing years will show. You have kept my love so young, so new. And time after time, you'll hear me say that I'm so lucky to be loving you.
All your favorite artists from the big band era are here.
Hi, friends, this is Frankie Lane, speaking to you from the station that plays the greatest big band music around.
On Swing Street Radio.